The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
It's a solo episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast this week as Matthew is sheltering place. Rodrigo is making a round trip to the airport. Rand was scheduled to be back this week, but he's away emceeing a barbershop quartet. Still, the show must go on, even if it's a bit shorter this week. Hi, everyone. I'm Stephen Schleicher. Thank you to all who are downloading and checking out our shows. We really enjoy hearing from you on our Discord server and via our socials. So, again, because we're doing a shorter show this week, I'm just going to jump right into new comic books. And while Space Ghost number one is high on my list, it was something that Matthew wanted to talk about. So I suspect he will post a review of Space Ghost number one from Dynamite Entertainment over at majorspoilers.com in the next few days. And if he doesn't, I'll do it. So my comic book this week is Lester of the Lesser Gods number one. It's from Dark Horse Comics. It caught my eye. It's written by Eric Powell of the Goon fame, along with Lucky Yates. And we also have Gideon Kendall, who is on art. So originally, my understanding is, Lester of the Lesser Gods was created as an unproduced animated short by Powell a decade ago. And then the concept was revived when the two were working together, Yates and Powell were working together to come up with a comic book project. Or a writing project. I don't know if the comic book was the intended outcome or not. So in Lester of the Lesser Gods number one, we get to meet Lester. He is literally the bastard son of Odin. Odin hooked up with a woman in a rundown dive bar, and then, you know, Lester was born and had to live his miserable life until the apocalypse came. And Lester decided to take on Satan, and then Odin gave him a trident, and he became a great warrior. And now he wanders the post-apocalyptic landscape, almost like a version of Conan, where he's fighting all sorts of different people. Now, one of the things that I should point out is that Lester is a big, fat man, and he wears a tiny, tiny thong, and he rides around on a motor scooter. And he ends up getting involved with a woman who's half feline, or, you know, like not her top half or her bottom half. She's like a anthropomorphic cat. And the two are forced to fight together in a gladiatorial arena. And they end up deciding that they will take down Will Fry, the technomancer guy. And the story is kind of goofy. It includes a lot of really crude humor. And, of course, a lot of fat jokes. Which, you know, that may be a turnoff for many people right from there. I went to push through it, and I don't think the jokes were completely offensive, towards fat people, but again, because Lester is making even some of the jokes himself, but a lot of it is very tongue in cheek. I guess I would say, well, there's two things. I would initially, when I read this and saw the pitch for it and read the first couple of pages, I was like, oh, this is that one John Candy bit from Heavy Metal, the movie. And so it did read like that. But after I started reading Lester and how he speaks and how he acts and how other people act towards him, I could totally see Jack Black voicing Lester in an animated version of this comic if Powell and Yates came around to making this. And or even live action. Jack Black could do the live action version of Lester, of the Lesser Gods. And that may be because of the Tenacious D, what was it, the post-apocalypto movie from 2018 that kind of has me thinking in that mindset. So From the story standpoint, it's a very much, you know, they even start off with this rundown robot at the beginning of the book saying, "Welcome, come closer to the fire. Let me tell you the tale of Lester of the Lesser Gods." You know, it's very much like a Conan opening. And so I appreciate the humor and the tongue-in-cheek humor that comes with this. The art is also very, very well done. The comic does a great job of bringing this story to life. And I really like the art, although just like the dialogue that uses a lot of fat humor at the expense of Lester, the art also does the same thing. Lester is, again, a very large man in a very tiny thong, and he's not wearing much else. I think he's wearing boots. He carries the weapon that Odin gave him, and I think he wears a hat, like a horned Viking helmet. And so that, again, may be a turnoff, but I really like the art. It is not in the style that you think of from The Goon, but it is kind of close to that. It's still very much worth checking out for that art style. I think that if you are a fan of Eric Powell's The Goon and some of his other works, then this will be right up your alley. If you can roll with the punches in regards to the humor, that didn't always hit the mark for me. But I still think Lester of the Lesser Gods number one is worth picking up this week from Dark Horse Comics if you want to check it out. I'm going to give it 3.5 slices of meatloaf. So that is my review. Lester of the Lesser Gods, out this week from Dark Horse Comics. And I want to try something. We'll be right back.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Thank you to everyone who supports the show and all the shows in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. This week, we send huge thanks out to J. Michael T., who upgraded their pledge this week. We're truly honored to have patrons like J. Michael T. who come in and give us generous support. I mean, very generous support. So thank you, J. Michael T., for that. We're waiting to give you a shout out on our show. If you would like to make a contribution, all you need to do is join us at patreon.com/majorspoilers. If you follow us on Twitter, formerly X, if you click on that Linktree link in my bio, some people have asked, what happens if we want to just make a one-time contribution? Then you can find a link in the Linktree to how to make a one-time PayPal contribution if you would like to do that. So what are some benefits of becoming a patron? Well, when you become that silver level patron, you get up to 4 bonus episodes each month that you're not going to find anywhere else. Go up to the gold level and you get up to 8 bonus episodes each month. Plus, you get a true inside look of what's going on at Major Spoilers when I do the monthly VIP chat. So what are you waiting for? Head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out what we are doing and consider becoming a patron today. We'd love to give you a shout out right here on this show. For our trade paperback discussion this week, we're taking a look at That Texas Blood Volume 2 by Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips and released through Image Comics. Now, the last time in Volume 1, we were introduced to Joe Bob Coates, the sheriff of Ambrose County, Texas, as he dealt with Randy Terrell's plight of dealing with his brother's death. If you don't remember that discussion, go back and listen to it. But in a nutshell, everything ended in blood, treachery, death, and definitely felt like a Quentin Tarantino or a Coen Brothers movie. So now that we get to Volume 2, everything moves from a revenge tale to one that is supernatural, as Sheriff Joe Bob Coates tells the story of a satanic cult that took up residence in Ambrose County, Texas. And this is done in flashbacks. And we jump back and forth from the present to 1981. And Sheriff Coates is recounting this tale to his deputy, the woman that we met in Volume 1. So 1981, if you are not familiar with the time period, was kind of the height of the Satanic Panic. Even the Satanic Panic still carries continues today. Don't get me wrong there. But while many people think that Satanic Panic peaked with the Helter Skelter guy, Charles Manson, and the Manson murders, it continued well into the 80s. And for those of you who are Dungeons & Dragons fans, you probably know all of the tales of that. So this story opens up with the death of a young boy and some cult members, and this idea that the Satanic Panic has infiltrated all the way from California to Texas. And what makes this interesting is that the Satanic Panic brings a little bit more tension to the tale, because we, the reader, and Sheriff Coates begin to wonder if the Texas town and county have been infected through evil over the ages. And of course, I've been reading the Enfield Gang Massacre, which takes place 150 years before Volume 1. And so I'm wondering if all of this will somehow percolate and create this very rich tapestry of tales set in Ambrose County, Texas. So there's a lot of flashbacks that happen back and forth, and I don't mind the flashbacks, because a lot of times they are used as the intro to each issue of the comic when they were originally released and not in the trade like we're doing now. But the flashbacks aren't always that way. There are times where the story in the middle of the tale where, you know, Sheriff Coates is telling his deputy about, you know, some of the problems and his beliefs that the soil is tainted and cursed. We get, you know, more present day interactions that way. I don't really mind this. Don't get me wrong. I don't really mind the flashbacks. But I kind of wish the story had used the present day tableau only at the beginning of the story and only at the end of the story, and just let the 1981 story happen in 1981 and not the jumping back and forth. Again, I don't mind that it jumps back and forth. It is a great way at the beginning of each issue to let readers know what's going on. It's a great way to summarize things. But I think it also removes some of the jeopardy that we have with Sheriff Coates, because he's telling the story. We're seeing it flash back. So at no point are we ever worried, or at least I'm never worried. We are never worried about the fate of Sheriff Coates. Now, we are a little worried about the people around him. Sheriff Coates comes into contact with a big city slicker who comes to investigate the murders. Again, this is 1981. And he believes that a person has moved into Ambrose County, a former Rolling Stone photographer, the magazine, not the band, is leading a cult of an ancient Mayan bat god, and they want to unleash the thing on the world, or at least get power from the god, or whatever the people make sacrifices to their gods for. Good weather, maybe. I don't know. What are people sacrificing in the name of their god these days? I have no idea. It's not good, I can guarantee you that. And so this guy, who is named Eversole, he is instantly dismissed. And there's a lot between Coates, who is not yet sheriff at this point. There is an older man who is the sheriff of Ambrose, Texas at this point. There is a lot of, this guy's full of crap, he's a huckster, these clairvoyant people that come prey on people, and they're just out to get your money, and we need to stay away from this, and we need to find the little missing little girl who everyone believes has been abducted by a cult, because, again, the story opens up with two dead cult members and a dead little boy, and the dead little boy's sister is missing, and the theory is that the little boy had his family gun, and he shot the cult members before he was murdered himself. The two kids are, I don't know if it's relevant to the story, but maybe, two little kids are probably 10, 11 years old, black children, but they are friends with Sheriff Coates. He is friends with the family, the single mother and the two children. So, you know, he is super invested in making sure that the mother does not lose a second child. It's already bad enough that she's lost her son. She doesn't want to lose the daughter. And so he starts to buy in to Eversole's story, and they go out and they investigate this guy, and they find another missing woman, or a woman who appears to be missing or claimed to be missing by the family. and everything appears to be cool, but they see some weird tattoos and they start believing that there is indeed a cult inside this house. And even though the sheriff of the county tells everyone, no, we're not worrying about this, this is nut job talking, Eversol and Coates do go and investigate, and they do discover a cult worshiping this bat god. And it gets pretty tense at the end. Again, we know that Coates is not going to die, but Eversol, the little girl, other members of the cast that we have met, they're kind of up in the air. We don't know about them, right? Eversol is kind of an interesting character because he kind of reminds me a little bit of Kolchak the Night Stalker. And I don't know if that was something that was intended by Condon. Is it Condon? I believe it is Condon. Maybe I've been saying Condon. It needs to be Corden. No, it's Condon. I don't know if Condon and Phillips intended for him to be instantly recognized as a Kolchak ripoff. I mean, he's not wearing a seersucker suit and a pork pie hat or anything like that, but he is wearing a suit and he is wearing, you know, kind of like a hat. That's, I will say, pretty common for people in the 80s to wear, including me as a young teenager. I would wear a hat like that. So I don't know if they were going for a Kolchak the Night Stalker type thing in this tale. I don't know if this is certainly not, you know, a Coen Brothers type movie like we saw in the first volume. Because this is kind of like buddy cop type tale. And again, buddy cop stuff filled the theaters in the 1980s, so I could see a little bit of that mixed in with your Satanic Panic. But I like this. I like this a lot. I like the character of Eversol a lot. This is a good story. Here's the thing. I did a bit of research to see if that Texas Blood had been picked up for a big screen adaptation or even a television series. But, you know, to this point, no one has taken the bait, which is a shame because combined with the first volume, and again, I am reading this each time we do a Texas, that Texas Blood thing. So I haven't read ahead except for that, the Enfield Gang Massacre. I think that a network, not the one who currently has the control of True Detective, but I think that Texas Blood would make a really great standalone series. You could almost take each volume and make it its own series of 8 to 10 episodes, even though the books are only 4 to 5 issues a piece, maybe 6 max. I know volume 1 was only like 4 or 5 and volume 2 is only 4 or 5 issues. I could see them expanding this out into 10 episodes to get a little bit more character development, get the audience a little bit more invested in things. I'm just saying that if you were looking for a new season, a fifth season of True Detective, I might look to Chris Condon to pin that tale. And I might just say, hey, can we just adapt that Texas Blood into the new season of True Detective? I know some of you are sitting there right now saying, look, every comic book does not need to be adapted into a live action series. Doesn't need to be turned into a TV series. Doesn't need to be turned into an animated movie. Doesn't need to be turned into a big screen movie. It can just stand as a comic book. And I agree with you completely. But I'm just saying, if somebody wanted a True Detective type story, this would be the one to adapt. That being said, season 3 of True Detective kind of had a lot of the similar stuff going on here, as we see in that Texas Blood. Jacob Phillips, the artist here, does his family proud once again with the art in this volume. Never do I have to wonder what's going on. I never get the characters confused. The coloring stays with the semi-watercolor treatment that Phillips is known for in all of his coloring. You can go check out the stuff that Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips do. He's been coloring a lot of that stuff over the years. He just really brings his craft to high standards in these books that he works on. And it kind of gives his coloring style and his art style kind of give this book a bit of a surreal feeling. And when you're dealing with these cult members who are not wearing like pointy KKK type hoods, but they're wearing these bifurcated hoods that look like devils. They're supposed to look like the bat god that they're worshiping. but all in red and in the dark and everything, and with Sheriff Coates stumbling upon them in the dark, it's creepy. It's really creepy, especially when they start wielding Mayan weapons of death and their shootouts and everything. Yes, there's a dead child in this that does become very haunting for Sheriff Coates. So trigger warning there if that bothers you, dead children, be aware of that. And while the story does wrap up kind of nicely with only a few deaths, again, one of them a young boy, I kind of would just say that I never thought that Coates was ever in any real danger because he's telling the story in the present. And I think that may be one of the bigger drawbacks when you're telling flashback stories like this. Not Flashpoint. That's a whole different thing. Go listen to the pre-show for that. I think after reading the Enfield Gang Massacre, after reading these two volumes of That Texas Blood, I'm finding that I'm pretty much fully invested in finding out where the bigger story of That Texas Blood goes. I want to know if they lean more into the supernatural. I do kind of dig that kind of stuff, even though I know it's a lot of mumbo jumbo type stuff. I do kind of like that thrill that yes, maybe there is. And there was definitely at the end of this volume, you are left wondering, is this all hokum? Did Eversole know something? Was he telling the truth? And that's what gets Coates reminiscing with his deputy at the beginning of the issue. So listen, if you like true crime and horror mixed together, then That Texas Blood Volume 2 is definitely a must read. And I think by the end of the trade, you'll agree with me that True Detective vibes run throughout this book. I want to say this was released in 2018. I think there's two more volumes of That Texas Blood to go. Maybe a fifth volume. I don't remember. I'd have to go look. I didn't look for this because, again, I expected to sit down and have a conversation with two other people. And then the tornado alarms went off and I was told, oh, I've got to go get my wife at the airport, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So apologizing for that. A little bit shorter conversation this week, but hopefully you enjoyed it. If you want to hear more of my ramblings, then check out the Major Spoilers Podcast pre-show, where I give my thoughts on Crisis on Infinite Earths, the animated movie, part 2. And I also talk about the first episode of Dead Boy Detectives, and I give some thoughts on maybe how to craft a better pitch when you're coming to somebody with an idea and making sure that it's an idea, not a thought. So you can go check out the Major Spoilers Podcast pre-show. Again, that's exclusive to our Patreon feed for anybody who is at the silver level or higher. And if you found some value in this show, this short conversation that I'm having with you, then please come over and join us at patreon.com/majorspoilers. You can find out all the information and all the bonuses you get, all the tiers that you can get. And thank you so much for your time. Thank you. And until next time, next week, we're going to be talking about Dark Ride. Oh, that one looks interesting. The second arc, I think, just kicked off at Image Comics. Is it Image Comics or Boom? I forget which. It's one of those two. But we're going to talk about Dark Ride next week. Why? Because we know that you love comics, and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Bad the X-ray vision of a Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. When I think about a better way, if I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I bag and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. I'll start raving, rich like a man of iron. Might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart gold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being the middle race with a king, son, throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2024 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.